Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, it is a Tuesday. I know I don't sound great. Feel good, though. Live in Los Angeles, it's the Herd. Wherever you may be, and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, I'm not going to sit around at home for another day feeling good, sounding lousy, and talk to myself. I had to get in Herd Hierarchy 1 hour from now. By the way, we really have some really interesting teams in the NFL. My Herd Hierarchy, I left two teams out that I don't even, and I think they're teams that are really close to a Super Bowl bubble. We've got some dynamic young quarterbacks and interesting teams. These games are so much fun to watch now. I mean, last week I'm watching Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow. And completely entertained, Joy Taylor is joining me today. We match.
It's a blue day. We're glad to have you back. I'm glad you're feeling better.
And by the way, I'm sick and feel fine this morning. And Joy is the first person to reach out and sent me a Santa Monica restaurant and chicken noodle soup. So we got each other's back. I totally appreciate that. It's interesting. I'm watching the Chargers. You know, nobody's lost more games over the last 20 years in the NFL they should have won than the Chargers. Block kicks, goal post, doink here, doink there. It's just a sea of craziness. Is Justin Herbert so good he can pull them out of the losing abyss and get them to a Super Bowl or a conference championship? I would just want to throw some numbers at you. And these are substantial. And they all, when you distill them down, come down to the same thing. He just had his sixth game with 3 touchdowns and no picks. And he's only played 19, and he's already on his second coach. He's the first quarterback ever to complete 500 passes before his 20th birthday. And here's one of the things about Justin Herbert that I love. I'm going to speak for guys right now. We have egos, and it's the testosterone, I think, and it's the egos. Guys, if they have a strength, they have to show it off. If a guy's got a great build, he always wears one T-shirt size too small. If a guy is funny, he's genuinely a funny guy, then he's the guy telling the jokes at the bar or the cocktail party. If a guy's brilliant, he's super smart, he's got to go to social media and rip people and show you how smart he is. We just can't help ourselves. We cannot help ourselves. We are show-offs. And in the NFL for quarterbacks, when they have big arms, you can go back to Joe Namath. He had to show you how big the arm was. Brett Favre, Big Ben. John Elway, Stanford guy. He wanted you to know, I'm going to squeeze this thing in that little keyhole. Jay Cutler, don't have to be great all the time. Zach Wilson now plays. He wants you to know he's got a great arm. The key to Justin Herbert's game is humility. He's got a cannon, and he could throw the ball through a battleship, and he rarely does. When he makes a mistake, it's because he doesn't pick up a read against Dallas in the red zone. He just doesn't see a defender. To have that kind of arm and to not at 23 years old constantly show it off with those receivers is really amazing. It's like having the best build in a gym and wearing a loose sweatshirt. It's like being the smartest guy in the world and not going to show off on Twitter. It's like being hysterically funny, going to a party and never telling a joke. Maybe one as you leave the party. This kid is 6'6", 238, a huge arm, 4-point major in biology. I like Derek Carr, but how small did Derek Carr look next to him? Derek Carr is 6'2.5", 212. Justin Herbert's 4 inches bigger, 3.5 inches bigger, and 25 pounds with a significantly better arm, and he only uses it sparingly. And this kid grew up, and I think a lot of this is, and that you see this all the time in a lot of industries, he was a late bloomer. He wasn't a 5-star recruit. He didn't have coaches telling him how great. Didn't have Alabama coming after him in Ohio State. Small town kid, grew up in the shadow at the University of Oregon. And so he was humbled early. He wasn't the biggest, strongest, coolest guy early. And as he developed, I've seen this my entire life with guys. When you're a late bloomer, you have this gratefulness and this humility. And I know it sounds weird. He plays with humility. But in my entire life, the biggest armed guy in the NFL often throws the most interceptions. And the way he plays, and you can tell his team trusts him. I say this all the time. a coaching staff will tell you what they think about your quarterback by the plays they dial up. This is becoming one of these teams that goes for it in fourth and four all the time. Brandon Staley, the head coach, talked about the team's trust. The kid's 23 years old. He's got 19 starts. That's what you do with Brady. That's what you do with Peyton Manning. That's what you do with Aaron Rodgers. Fourth and four against an undefeated team, Monday Night Football. We're going to go for it. Brandon Staley.
And that's what he earns on a day-to-day basis with how hard he works and how he prepares and then how well he performs in those got-to-have-it situations. And he's got that cool, calm composure that affects everybody in a positive way, including me. And I felt like he executed very well tonight.
There's a quote years ago from an NFC scout that was talking about Justin Herbert. Everybody said the scout's going to knock him. Is he too nice? Is he too nerdy? Is he too introverted? That's a bunch of bull blank. He's super smart, tough as blank. He doesn't have that Joe Burrow confidence yet. He's a late blooming kid, under-recruited. Eugene was his home, and being a Duck quarterback was a pinnacle. He's just growing up as a young man. He doesn't yet even know how great he can be. We talked about this. Joy and I would go on the air and we're like, he's 6'6", 240 runs. We don't understand. We watched them in the Rose Bowl. And Joy and I came on the day after the Rose Bowl, probably the best Wisconsin defense in my life. And we're like, well, I don't understand why everybody doesn't like Joe. I don't understand why everybody doesn't like Justin Herbert. A lot of it is late bloomer, plays with humility. Kid has no idea. And I want to shift to Mac Jones, because Mac Jones, I believe, let's talk about that. I didn't get to talk about Brady and Mac Jones. So Justin Herbert doesn't know how good he is. He's going to explode through this ceiling. And I'm watching Mac Jones, and I think what you see with Mac Jones is, what you see is what you get. This is it. I mean, he'll get a little better, but, you know, he had 18 straight completions, runs the offense, puts him in the right position. You saw him. I thought he played really well. He's stepping back off the line. He's calling audibles as a kid. It was very interesting as I watched that game. And there was a singular player in that Patriots game that really set it all for me. And he works hard, and he deserves a lot of credit. His name is Jakobi Meyers. He's an undrafted wide receiver. He has become the primary target for Mac Jones. Undrafted. He was also there when Brady was there. And that's why Tom left. Not a personal shot at Jakobi Meyers. Is this league, as you look around last night, all the talent for the Raiders, and this weekend, Arizona, Seattle, look at all the wide receiver talent. It doesn't. You pick the team. Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Buffalo, Tampa. Tom Brady goes into that stadium, doesn't play well. His warm weather team doesn't play well. He's on the road. He probably has the second best coach in the game, and Brady wins as Mac Jones plays brilliantly. That is why Brady left. I mean, Mac Jones is great. He's an operator. He'll be as good as his parts. I cannot think of another player ever, a quarterback who had significantly better weapons in his last year in college than his first year in the NFL. And it, my friends, is not close. He had better college offensive teammates than New England. And it's not like Belichick hasn't tried. The Mohamed Sanu trade, bust. N'Keal Harry pick, bust. Sony Michel, no longer with the team. As I watch that game, I'm like, this is why Tom left. New England has to play perfect football to win. And they almost did. They had a fumble, and they had a field goal hit the crossbar. Otherwise, they played really, really well. Tom Brady wanted to be the man. He didn't want to be the only man. That game is the future of New England. They have a hole. Nobody is perfect in the salary cap era. The Chiefs' defense, really struggling. Right? The Chiefs' defense, Super Bowl favorites, really struggling. Nobody's perfect. But what you can't be is slow. The game, the quarterbacks, the wide receiver talent has never been more dynamic. And New England, for the third or fourth year in a row, has no deep threat. no playmakers, not dynamic, and now a quarterback who they're going to ride with for probably 10 years with an incredibly low ceiling. That game and the way they won it, playing imperfectly on the road, the warm weather Bucks up to soggy New England, is precisely why Tom left. They're trying to figure it out, and they can't. They just don't have any playmakers. Great to have you in today. It was a wild scene. I know it was crazy that we have a dome stadium in Los Angeles and yet had weather delays. I know, only in Los Angeles. Listen, we set trends here. That's just what we do. Herd hierarchy in 45 minutes. A lot to talk about.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Weather looking nasty? Don't change your plans. Change your wiper blades. Michelin wiper blades, advanced technology, hug the windshield. Get them at Walmart. So you may have noticed in Los Angeles, despite the Rams getting to a Super Bowl and the Chargers having a winning record, the Raiders are not only the most popular NFL team. The Raiders are the number one NFL brand in Los Angeles pro football by a mile. If they played in Los Angeles, it would be Lakers, Dodgers, Raiders, and then USC. That's how popular they are. 80 to 85% of the stadium last night sounded like it was Raider fans. You know, it's funny. The Raiders have not won. They're very unique, their fans. They have not won a Super Bowl since 1984. They've not won a playoff game since 2002. They've had one winning season since 2002. And the Raiders are the only pro sports franchise in America that moves regularly and retains 100% of their fan base. It grows. It grows. The Chargers have moved once up the freeway an hour and a half and lost almost all their fans. It is an amazing. If you ever get in a flight on Southwest Airlines on a Sunday morning or Saturday night, it's a lot of Raider fans during the NFL season going to their games. I think there's a certain ethos, and I think it's an important part of the NFL's allure, is that, you know, the Cowboys feel flashy, the Packers feel small town, the Patriots felt very corporate, and the Raiders feel like they don't belong, and nobody really truly wants them. And that's a powerful ethos to their fans. They are the outliers, the kids nobody invites to the popular parties, and their fans completely, utterly embrace it. I think this is one of the things the NFL's got going right now for them, of the many things. Betting is now exploding in America, and football is the one sport we bet. There's a certain scarcity of games and urgency. I think it is very smartly commissioned and run. Yes, I'm a member of the American sports media that thinks Roger Goodell is actually pretty darn good. But this is also part of the NFL's appeal. They got a villain. They got an outlier. They've got the team that nobody's quite comfortable with and fans that are a little edgy. But no pro sports franchise in America has moved regularly. Now they left the state. I mean, if you go to a USC football game in Los Angeles, if they have an ugly first half, you can see cars leaving. The Raiders have had multiple ugly departures from stadiums, provinces, area codes, and states. And I don't know if they've ever been more popular. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
All right, we got a little coaches beef going on, Colin.
Oh, is this the Vic Fangio Harbaugh thing?
It's a little pettiness being exchanged. Well, Denver, we'll just play the sound of both coaches talking about it. But Denver head coach Vic Fangio spoke first about the final play call by the Ravens in Sunday's game.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of but I expected it from them. You know, I've 37 years in pro ball. I've never seen anything like that. So, but it was to be expected, and we expected it.
Why did you expect it from them?
Because I just know how they operate. You know, that's just their, mode of operation there. Player safety is secondary.
Well, John Harbaugh responded to those comments from Vic Fangio yesterday.
I mean, I thought we were on good terms. We had a nice chat before the game. Known each other for a long time, but I promise you, I'm not going to give that insult one-second thought. That's what's meaningful to us might not be meaningful to them. Their concerns are definitely not our concerns.
Can I defend John Harbaugh here?
Okay.
So I've worked at the two largest sports companies in America.
Yes.
ESPN, where I was wildly popular, and they tolerate me here at Fox. What matters to Fox, we roll our eyes at some of the stuff they do, and right. they probably roll their eyes at stuff we do. And I clearly prefer one over the other. But the point being is, worry about your own house. When we do stuff at Fox in our show, mm-hmm. one of the things we never do, we have a lot of shows that talk about us. We never fire back. Joy and I worry about our show. I'm really over. Here's my knock. There's a piece of video out there that when the Ravens were going for it on that run, Fangio was right down the line watching them. He knew they were going for 100. He wanted to stop them.
Right.
So if you stop competing, then I guess I'll stop competing. But I worry about your own team and your own issue. And stop talking about player safety. We all know there's a regulated level of violence in the NFL. Everybody that suits up, hell, you're a coach, you got to watch yourself on a sideline or you can get hurt. So whenever I hear somebody talking about somebody else's team or somebody else's business or somebody else's podcast, worry about your own stuff. Denver right now got worked at home. You got worked at home. You got to worry about Teddy Bridgewater's health.
Yeah.
And your offensive line and your inability to stop Lamar Jackson on big throws in your secondary. So I'm going to defend, and I know I'm in the minority here, but I'm going to defend Baltimore and John Harbaugh. My business, my team. You know who John Harbaugh is responsible for? Okay, right now Urban Meyer's struggling in his locker room. You know who's not? John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh walks into his locker room, and those guys love John Harbaugh.
Right.
Because he doesn't give a rip about your defense and your feelings. And I think what makes John Harbaugh special is he has total belief from his players. Total belief.
Well, we didn't play the entirety of the sound, but he also mentioned that, you know, they're throwing the ball in the end zone with 10 seconds left down exactly. 16 points. There's not a 16-point play or way to score 16 points on one play either. So, you know, you can get picky here with at what point in the game you should stop competing. And it is for a record and whatever. You can feel how you want to feel about it. I'm with you. Like, some people feel like it's a little bush league. I feel like stop them. That's like when people are like, oh, like you're running the score up. Like, it's professionals. Stop them. Stop them from scoring.
Yeah.
That's what you're out there to do.
By the way, guys,
sometimes this is not your day.
You know what? Some of these professional athletes have bonuses tied to 100-yard games, and By the way, I'm rooting for Denver. It's a great city. It's a great fan base. I really like their team.
But that was a bad loss for them. Now, obviously, Teddy wasn't out there, so you know, you can take that obviously into consideration.
But Baltimore won the day. And the winner of the war writes the book on it. So you get to do what you want to do.
Well, they won't face off again this season unless they meet in the playoffs, which we'll see how that goes for the Broncos. The Broncos face the Steelers this Sunday and are 1.5-point underdogs. And the Ravens are up against the Colts on Monday night and are 7-point favorites, according to Fox Bet. Oh, the Cardinals. Might have been a little bit wrong about the Cardinals this year. So they started last season hot and then cooled off. But head coach Cliff Kingsbury is not going to let the Cardinals 4-0 start get to their heads. He said, collectively after last year, we made a point to stay in the present, to focus on one week at a time and trying to improve each week. And I think our guys have done a nice job so far.
They brought in some veterans, some leaders, some J.J. Watt. I mean, that should be noted. That was a real plan, that we need a little more maturity and a little more leadership.
Yes. Well, they started 6-3 and then last year and then lost 5 of their last 7 to miss the playoffs for the fifth consecutive season. Now they look on fire this year, obviously, and that was a huge win over the Rams. So it does appear that those additions and this mentality of staying week to week and not getting caught up in what your record is helping, on top of the fact that they are playing amazing football. While everyone's focusing on the offense, the defense has been incredible as well.
Yeah.
Like, this is a complete football team.
You know, you and I had talked about this before the year. I said I had picked Arizona for fourth, and I said they're going to be easily the fourth best team in NFL football. This division is so far from over. I mean, the Rams played virtually perfect football against the Super Bowl champion Bucks, and then came out in this game, and you could tell two series in, they were totally flat.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that game with the Bucks, it not only because of SoFi, it looked like a conference championship game. It felt like it, and they played that level. But, you know, we always have a rule on this show. The Tennessee Titans last week lose. Watch them bounce back and play great. The Raiders last night got pushed around. Watch the Raiders come back next week and play really well. The Rams looked perfect, came out flat, and now they on Thursday night, this will be a great game. They go to Seattle. Mark my words. The Rams will be totally buttoned up in Seattle on Thursday. That is a great Thursday game.
It's a great game. Well, so they play this week, and the Cardinals and Niners play this week. So this is a huge divisional week for the NFC West. And the Cardinals are favored by 5.5, according to Fox Bet. But they're averaging 35 points per game.
They're crazy fun. They almost feel, you know, Kingsbury comes from college. Kyler, 1 year in college. I'll be honest with you. They got about 15% Oklahoma Sooner. They got a little college. You know, they're kind of just, I mean, Kyler Murray is...
They're the best watching football to me right now.
Kyler Murray is. He had a 3rd-and-16 run for a first down. And it was just one play. It was so heartbreaking for the Rams is that they really defended it perfectly. I mean, he is, you know, they say he's the best high school quarterback of all time. People that saw him play in Texas say he's the best high school quarterback anybody's ever seen. How Texas A&M let him walk, I will never know.
Well, that's what happens when you have a dynamic athlete at quarterback. He can do things like that.
Yeah.
So, Ben Simmons drama, a lot has been said about what's going on there. And Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer reported that Simmons' agent Rich Paul said he has made it clear to the Sixers the reason for his client's trade demand right from the start. He said the Sixers asked Simmons why he wanted out, and Paul informed them that the point guard was mentally exhausted. The source believes they didn't pay attention to Simmons' state of mind or feelings about being in Philly because of the 4 years remaining on his contract.
Oh boy.
Ben Simmons has denied all efforts to the Sixers to bring him back, so this is obviously a deep problem. The Athletic reported that Simmons believes his partnership with Joel Embiid has run its course, and Joel hinted that Simmons' desire to be the primary ball handler while Jimmy Butler was gone, called the situation weird, disappointing, borderline disrespectful. So they've taken money out, and they've put it in an escrow account. When he didn't show at the Toronto opener, they removed $360,000 from this account that has $8.25 million. So they have to dock him pay if he doesn't show up.
Right.
But what's happening now is a precedent conversation. With contracts, there's always the conversation of precedent. We can't give you this because that's a precedent. And then the next person that comes along is going to want that. And then so on and so forth. That's what companies do when you're in these situations. And because there are 4 years left on this massive contract, there is a feeling that they can't cave to him because this is setting a precedent that is beyond what is normal for a star to ask out. On top of the fact that they've already gone to such lengths to accommodate Ben Simmons.
Well, and once Ben Simmons and his representatives bring up mental health, and nobody can say anything because then you lack empathy. So I'm not here to second guess Ben Simmons, but when you use that.
Yes.
Okay, it's a mental health issue. Well, then in Philadelphia, the Sixers are trapped. They can't say anything or they'll look like they lack compassion. So, I mean, what you're basically saying in this whole story is now that Ben Simmons is a victim of all these circumstances, and I'm going to push back on that and say many were created by Ben Simmons. I'm not saying he is completely at fault, but I don't like the I'm the victim in this. They weren't aware of. It's like, come on now.
There's plenty of blame to go around in this situation. I think you and I are on the same page about all of it. At the end of the day, we all saw this coming. Every time I talk about
years
this,
ago.
It's not with any level of surprise.
Right.
Like this whole situation could have been avoided if you looked at what was happening, not only off the court, but on the court.
It's like Jimmy Garoppolo being hurt early in the season. We talked about it literally potentially happening. Like Ben Simmons and conflict with the Sixers, we were on this 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Like this is not a shocker, like a meteor that strikes your house and you... It destroys the property. It's like we saw it coming for years.
And I really do wonder what the anxiety from the organization was to handle it earlier.
No.
Because now here you are.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. We bring on our NFL information guy, Peter Schrager. I got to tell you, Herbert... I talked about earlier his humility. To have an arm like that and to not need to show it off. I mean, he'll dump off in 1 second to Eckler, any of these backs. I think they stumbled upon, I mean, I shouldn't say stumbled upon, they obviously did their homework. I look at Herbert, and I know, Peter, this is going to sound like I'm being ridiculous, but I'm like, not only a top 10 quarterback, I think he can go toe-to-toe. I think he's very close going toe-to-toe with all these guys, including Mahomes. I mean, I think he's that gifted. Am I nuts?
No, he's outstanding. Think about this. We went nuts about Trubisky being selected before Mahomes and Watson. Tua Tagovailoa was selected one pick before Justin Herbert. You look at the two now, and I know Tua's hurt, and it's been a slow start for Tua, but, like, this guy might end up being as good as Mahomes. That's how good Herbert is. And, like, how did we miss this yet again? The fact he even went that late in the draft, sixth overall, when you're watching him last night. But he's found the perfect match in the coach. You know there's scar tissue with this fan base, Colin.
Yeah.
The Chargers fan has been through the Marty Schottenheimer 14-2 year and Marlon McCree fumble. And you want to go through Nate Kading missed field goals recently. And even last year, all the losses at the end of the game. And, like, Staley is making a point. It's very deliberate. We're not going to play not to lose. We're going to win. 2 weeks ago in Arrowhead, they had a 4th and 5. There was a false start, went to 4th and 9. And he went for it. They got a pass interference. They moved the chains. Last night, they're up 21-0. They're cruising. It's now 21-14. They're in Raiders territory, and you get a 4th and 2, and they don't even question it. It's like, we're going for it. Joey Bosa spoke about it after the game. He's like, at halftime in the past, you'd say, oh my God, we're going to lose it somehow. Staley's not letting it. And I talked to Brandon a bunch over the offseason. Like, he knew. This wasn't just a job. There are ghosts in that franchise. Yeah. There are dragons to be slayed. So you have to go for it. You have to be deliberate about it. They're going for it. They're in attack mode. I respect the heck out of this guy, Brandon Staley, what he's doing. Now, this is a cancer survivor. He was 24 years old, had Hodgkin's, came over that, and he's living like, this is all house money now. Let's play and coach that way. I love it. They're believing in him. They're a real team.
Yeah, it's a really great point. There are ghosts. We talked about that. I always use the example years ago. Curt Schilling was the perfect personality. He may have driven people crazy, but the Red Sox had better teams than the Yankees for a decade, and they couldn't burst through the door. And you needed Schilling, who was just obnoxious and confident. Give me the ball. I'm going to get through the Yankees. And sometimes you need those superstar athletes. By the way, the Cowboys, I have spent the better part of my broadcasting career saying the Cowboys are good but not special, and so I'm sure Texas hates me more than most states. But I will tell you, I watched them this year, and for the first time since I can remember, Schrags, I think they're underrated. I think they're really, really potential.
They're really good.
I know. They are. Your thoughts?
You know, the one team that has put a pounding on the L.A. defense that charges – the Cowboys ran for 200 yards on that team.
Yep.
And the Cowboys put a lot of points. But the difference this year, they got a defense. It's unbelievable what they're doing on defense. Trayvon Diggs has 5 interceptions through 4 games. He's got 8 interceptions through 16 career games. And Sam Darnold on back-to-back drives through picks to Trayvon Diggs. Then you add in Micah Parsons. You add in this kid, Odigizuwe. They're young.
Yeah.
They're talented. And Dan Quinn is pulling all the right strings. We knew they were going to score points on offense. The Cowboys' defense, it is what's so impressive right now. Usually, you're right, Colin. I work on a morning show where we talk football. It's good to talk Cowboys, good or bad. They sell. It's nice to authentically believe that this team is worth talking about, and we're not pulling at strings and trying to do something here to make it work and get a rating point. No, it's okay to talk the Cowboys. They are that good, and this defense is the difference this year.
All right, what do you do in Pittsburgh? We spent the entire offseason lamenting it. We always knew that Breeze, you know, at the end of a year, doesn't quite have the push. You can see that even in Foxborough, Brady's December numbers, his last several year there, just erode slightly. Ben, though, looks shot, and we're in the first week of October. What to do? I think they're in a really bad space in Pittsburgh. I don't see the plan going forward. Your thoughts?
I'm going to make a comment that is not going to go over great with everyone, especially fans of Green Bay or people on Twitter. This is why they take a Jordan Love. This is why the Giants take a Daniel Jones when Eli is still there. So that when that does happen, and it typically does happen when the quarterback turns 38 years old and his performance starts to slide, it's a smooth transition to not just a quarterback, but a top quarterback, a first-round quarterback, a quarterback you like. Dwayne Haskins is there with Mason Rudolph right now. Neither one of those guys have shown any indication that they are a top tier future quarterback. So there's no reason to pass that torch. But what if the Steelers, with their first round pick this year, had selected a young quarterback? What if the Steelers last year, with a first round pick, had selected a young quarterback? It might be an exit plan or at least insurance policy behind Ben. Now here we are, and it's week 5. The Steelers play a ferocious Denver Broncos defense this week. And it's kind of like, it's got to be Ben because, well, we don't really have another option. It's never comfortable when you draft that young quarterback in the first round when you have the guy there. But guess what? There's a reason teams do this, and this is kind of that situation. I don't think the Steelers are going to find their way out of this thing. Ben's not suddenly going to get younger as the season goes on. They're still going to win games. Mike Tomlin's a good coach. But gosh, they're already in a bind and it's October. That's why you draft the young quarterback in the first round.
Yeah, you're right. You get heat for it, but there's a reason teams do it. The smart ones do it. And finally, I like gossip. Fox just bought TMZ. I'm for that acquisition. I like my occasional gossip. What is an NFL gossip of note this morning?
Shout out to Harvey Levin, who I'm sure
yes.
is watching this
Love
morning.
Harvey.
TMZ icon. Love him with his drink always, just like leaning over in a cubicle. Here's the gossip I got. And Joy might have her ear closer to the ground down there in Miami. But this trade deadline is approaching.
Yes.
And there's still nothing on Deshaun Watson from the league. He's not been suspended. He's not on the commissioner's exempt list. And certainly there has been no verification from the Houston Texans that they are looking to put him in the lineup. They are paying him $10 million a year right now. He is on the roster. He is getting paid. He is not traveling with the team. He is not with the team. He still has a trade demand. And he has a no-trade clause, meaning you can't send him to a place he doesn't want to be. The Miami Dolphins are now 1-3 with Jacoby Brissett, with a feeling that this team is a playoff roster. I know this, that Deshaun Watson's lawyer, Rusty Hardin, has been approached by multiple teams to say, what do you got? We haven't heard anything from the league. There's no jurisdiction. What are we doing here? I would just say keep an eye on this situation as the weeks unfold. Jay Glazer said that the Texans have lessened their trade demands, which was originally 3 first-round picks and 3 additional assets. But as teams are starting to look at the rest of the season and saying, wait a second, we can't fall behind and go 1-3, 1-4, 2-5, and the trade deadline approaches, look for more research and more stuff on Deshaun Watson to get a little bit louder. Again, the league has offered no jurisdiction yet. There has been nothing from the league as far as this guy is out for the rest of the year. Most teams are going to stay away and say that's not our problem. A team, I say the Dolphins, not because I know for a fact that the Dolphins are interested. I say the Dolphins because they had playoff expectations, and now they're 1-3, and this quarterback is really good. If a team feels confident enough in doing it, let's hear these rumors and if they get a little bit louder and louder as the trade deadline approaches.
Check out Schrag's weekly cheat sheet on the Fox Sports app. Inside stuff, players to watch like Deshaun Watson, some pop culture. Great seeing you as always, buddy. You look so comfortable there. You got your hoodie on.
I'm telling you here. This hoodie right here, this is Blake Shelton's bar. I'm wearing it because he's a Cardinals fan. Blake, I watch you on The Voice. If you watch Colin and the Herd, feel free to tweet the show.
Good seeing you, Schrags. Appreciate it as always. We have our herd hierarchy at the top of next hour. There's a lot of good football teams. I left 2 teams out of the herd hierarchy. 3, actually. I'll give you an example. I don't have the Raiders in it, and I think the Raiders will come back next week and be great. I think the Raiders are a really good football team. I think last night was a hard game to win. Sometimes you go on the road, and it's just not going to be great. Sunday night games at Lambeau, those are hard to win. Playing the Packers after they were drubbed by the Saints, that's a hard game to win. I felt Tampa Bay going into SoFi felt like the Super Bowl. Raiders last night coming to Los Angeles, that was a huge game for the Chargers, who had kind of blown a game against Dallas. You could sense very early in that game the Chargers were completely dialed in, getting intense pressure on Derek Carr on every snap. He couldn't set his feet.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sportsbook, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is great to have you in. It's such a bummer. I swear to God, the last two times I've been unable to show up for a Monday show, Brady after winning the Super Bowl, health issue, and Brady on Monday, I was sick. There is something about the pressure to talk about Tom Brady that screws up my body. I also want to talk about Baker Mayfield and the fact that I really didn't talk about him much. Baker was awful on Sunday, but I thought it was a huge moment for the Cleveland Brown organization. Their quarterback was awful. That's as bad as he's played in the last 2 years, and he admitted it. And they won. I don't know. That's what good teams do. I'm not going to rip Baker because I've never held Baker to an Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, a Kyler Murray, Josh Allen talent standard. I don't see him as a number one pick, although he was. I don't see him as a superstar. I see him more in the mold of Kirk Cousins. I don't talk much Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins gives you three bad games a year because he's solid to good. He is not spectacular. He often shrinks in big moments. But I don't crush Kirk Cousins for that because I don't hold him to an incredible standard. I look in the NFL, the quarterbacks who I view as franchise quarterbacks, so I'm not talking about the busts, I'm not talking about the backups, the quarterbacks, and this certainly includes Kirk Cousins and Baker Mayfield, that I do think of as franchise quarterbacks, they kind of fall into two camps. Solid, you can win games, but they need a lot of help. Solid and good. And then stars. Herbert, I see as a star. Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, Josh Allen. I'm a big fan of Lamar Jackson. He wins 80% of his games. Those guys will have stinkers too. But with Baker Mayfield, I bake in my expectations aren't as high. So it's totally unfair for me after a stinker to come out here and go, he wasn't any good. He's going to give you two or three of those a year. And when Baker doesn't have a great running game and he's missing Jarvis Landry, he's not the same player. So I just don't hold him in that stature. I hold him a little bit to an older Matt Ryan. I think a younger Matt Ryan was better than Baker, but an older Matt Ryan isn't. Kirk Cousins, Baker, Jared Goff. I thought my takeaway from this entire game is that Cleveland, their star quarterback in a quarterback league, played poorly. He sailed everything. And they won. And I don't think Minnesota's a bad team. I think Minnesota's got a pretty good roster. I think Minnesota's got a pretty good coach. I think Minnesota's a pretty well-run organization. And they won. That's not a game Cleveland won the last 20 years. Cleveland never wins that game in 20 years. In 20 years, if their quarterback stunk the yard up, and Baker said as much, he used words I can't on television, they would have never won that game. So their defense, Myles Garrett could be a top three player in the league. Unblockable. I mean, literally unblockable. Their secondary forced Kirk Cousins into one of his worst games the last 2 years. So there's my takeaway. I can't quite figure this out. You know, let me add this. Nick Wright always says this about the NBA. If you're a star in the NBA, a star, Klay Thompson's a star, and you have a bad game, we don't talk about it. If you're a superstar and have a bad big game, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Steph Curry, oh, you're a bum. In the NFL, same thing for quarterbacks. If you're a superstar, Aaron Rodgers, you have a bad week one. We talked about it for 2 weeks. If Kirk Cousins has a bad game, we may not talk about it on the show Monday. And so, and that's not a knock. I consider Baker a franchise quarterback, good to solid. When he's got a lead, when he's got a running game, when he's got protection, he can be good. And when he doesn't, he's solid. That's about it. Not carrying anything. But I'm not... You know, Baker was much tougher on Baker than I am today. Had a bad game. He's going to have two or three a year because I don't think he's Kyler Murray. I don't think he's Aaron Rodgers. When Aaron has a bad game, the ultimate compliment that Aaron Rodgers gets, I don't think Aaron quite gets this. Maybe he does in retrospect. The greatest compliment I can give Aaron Rodgers is we rip you for a singularly bad game because you have like one every 2 years. Like, you don't play like that. I mean, like Tom Brady won on the road, and what did most of us say? Tom wasn't very good. We never criticize a quarterback who wins road games in bad weather. Warm weather team, bad weather, go up northeast, no matter who it is, and you win the game. And we're always totally satisfied. But with Brady, we're like, yeah, Tom got outplayed by Mac Jones. Why? Because he's Tom Brady. Sometimes you getting ripped is the greatest compliment. Our standards for LeBron, our standards for Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady are so high that in a big spot to stink, it's like, whoa. Baker's solid. He was bad. It happens. It's not worth multiple segments. It happens. Cleveland won. That was the whole day. Jersey Mike's, order it on your mobile app. Get delivery to your home. Pick up from your nearest location. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above. I will say this. It is one of the hardest herd hierarchies I've ever done. Because I think there are, outside of one team that I think is totally exceptional and maybe a 1A, I think everybody is a field goal away from each other. I think this league right now at the top is, I always do eight teams in the Super Bowl bubble. It may be 12. I think everybody in this league except one team can be beaten by everybody else. Almost. Don't count the Lions in that.